on Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. Pakistan being given 10 days to lift current martial law or face suspension from a 53-nation bloc. Foreign ministers put out the warning in light of continuing emergency rule in Pakistan. Former Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto placed again under house arrest for the second time in 4 days. She's being kept from leading tomorrow's 185-mile procession in protest of current martial law. President Musharraf promises that general elections will be held by January 9th, but that the state of emergency imposed 1 week ago will stay in place till then. Hamas police killing 7 people in Gaza City during a huge political rally to commemorate the death of Yasser Arafat. Another 130 people were wounded. There's a growing humanitarian crisis in Somalia. Over the last 24 hours, residents fled the capital city of Mogadishu as government forces increased efforts to crush Islamist-led insurgents. Aid workers say at least 70 people have been killed during more than 1 week of intense fighting, bringing the total number of displaced Somalians to 850,000. The U.S. military is reversing the troop surge in Iraq. Commanders are waiting to see if the recent drop in violence will hold. 20 combat brigades have shrunk to 19 in the volatile Diyala province. The White House is under federal court order to preserve copies of its email messages in response to a pair of lawsuits brought by 2 private citizens groups. The U.S. Justice Department asked that the courts accept a White House promise to save all future backup tapes, but U.S. District Judge Henry Kennedy decided that was not enough. As the Roman Catholic Church in the U.S. attempts to overcome a damaging scandal involving pedophile priests, Pope Benedict XVI makes a visit to America next April. He'll visit Washington, D.C. and New York City, including an address to the United Nations. It's the first planned papal visit to the U.S. since 1999. And Republican presidential candidate Fred Thompson is being endorsed by an anti-abortion group, which could increase his support among conservative voters. The National Right to Life Committee plans to make the announcement later this evening. Thompson's election committee, though, has declined to confirm the endorsement right now. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We'll check science and business news just ahead.
PM Forney is on a mission to make life better. His pathway is civility. A professor at Johns Hopkins University, his pioneering study in civility produced a book called Choosing Civility, The 25 Rules of Considerate Conduct. In his book, Forney explains what is civility and what it means to be civil in today's world. He explores the recent decline of civility and offers ways that the direction might be reversed. His brilliant and engaging discourse outlines civility's basic rules, underscoring the values that practicing civility brings to our own lives, as well as to the lives of others. Forney's book is sprinkled with stimulating quotes, such as this by Dwight Curry, who said, "We have a choice about how we behave, and that means we have the choice to opt for civility and grace." For more information, click the Civility button on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
In Valencia, Spain, a meeting today of the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, co-winner of the Nobel Peace Prize. The group is compiling a summary of 3 comprehensive reports on global warming. Former Vice President Al Gore is now an official venture capitalist. The 2000 Nobel Peace Prize winner today joining Silicon Valley's top venture capital group, Kleiner Perkins, as the company heads into the competitive world of, quote, clean technology. It is the largest order in the history of European aircraft maker Airbus. Dubai placing an order yesterday for more than $20 billion worth of aircraft, including 11 super jumbo jets, the A380s. The U.S. trade deficit fell to $56.5 billion in September, its lowest level in more than 2 years. The plunging value of the U.S. dollar has increased American exports. Asian markets fell steeply today on continued concerns about the U.S. credit crisis, Japan's Nikkei average hitting its biggest low of the year. Light sweet crude trading at $94.62 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Gold at $807.70 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 55 points to end at 12,987. NASDAQ down 43. S&P 500 off 14. More at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Get around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the Dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 69 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively on listener-supported Head On Radio Network. Please stop by the headonradionetwork.com site, and you'll find a PayPal button there, and you can help us keep the stream on the air and the servers serving and the packets passing and the lights flashing. We appreciate your help. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Monday, November the 12th. So if you're listening at about 9 p.m. Eastern Time, you're indeed listening to a live show, and you're welcome to phone in and talk to myself or my guest, who I will be introducing later. Our guest will be joining us at 9:30 p.m. I'll tell you a little bit about him in just a moment. The telephone numbers are 877, the number 4, Head On. That's 877, the number 4, Head On. Or if you have unlimited long distance, please use 304-658-3333. That rings in West Virginia. And I'd normally try to check email during the breaks. Peter, or the address is Peter at headonradionetwork.com. That's Peter at headonradionetwork.com. You'll find the website at strictlyconfidentialradio.com. You'll find links there to the guests and to the guests' websites, as well as to the audio archives from past shows. These are links that are hosted by White Rose Society, without which we could not do this network at all. Ben Birch, Bob says, is the hardest working man in radio. You'll find links from strictlyconfidentialradio.com to the archives, as well as to the chat room, which is active as we speak. Our good friend Joe Vecchio, whose show airs after this at 11 p.m., who does Nighttime Cup of Joe, often lists off the folks in the chat room, and I decided it's a pretty good idea. We have B.J. Goodmundson, as close as I could come. Of course, we have Bob Kincaid and Cobwebs and Sue and Gene and James B. and Jersey and John Fox and Mr. Lottergy himself. We have On the Road and moi, Peter Godbold. We have Danette and Ralphs and Randy D. and Toulouse-Lautrec. You really should check out the chat room if you have not done that at this point in time. I realize that if you're listening to this show via archive or delayed stream, you can't do that, but you are, in fact, a welcome listener to this show also. But if you are listening live, you are missing a good part of the show by not going to the chat room. You'll find the link to the chat room at strictlyconfidentialradio.com. It's there on the homepage. You'll find links there to the Head On Radio Network main site. You can find out about all of the other progressive programs and Strictly Confidential's MySpace page and links to help you locate the music on the show. As Bob was saying earlier, this is, in fact, Veterans Day weekend. And as you know, on Veterans Day weekend, there's a huge Veterans Parade in New York City. We are going to be contacting Denny Meyer later this week. Denny Meyer has been a guest on the show. Denny Meyer, wonderful guest. We loved him. He represents American Veterans for Equal Rights and also the Gay Military Times. He has incredible stories to tell. Denny is extremely active in the New York Veterans Parade regarding the LGBT contingent, and he always has wonderful stories to tell. Denny goes into collapse mode immediately after the parade, Sunday and Monday is is more than busy for Diddy. So hopefully we'll be able to get him on maybe Saturday, or rather Friday. There's no guest scheduled for Friday at this point. This is a interesting week on Strictly Confidential. I'm glad you can be with us tonight at 9:30. Dennis Dyson of the Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund will join us. If you recall, in the past, we've had several candidates from the Victory Fund who have been on the show. Kevin Beckner, a Hillsborough County Commission in Florida. We had, that was in July. In August, we had Jeff Anderson, who ran for Duluth County City Council at Large, Duluth City Council at Large. In August, we had Fred Mason, who ran for Baltimore City Council. Only a few days ago, we had Howard Bayless, who was one of the first openly gay men to be elected to public office. We'll have more folks who are represented by Victory Fund also who have been candidates around the country and have been elected or are very close to being elected. But I thought it was a good idea for you tonight to hear from straight from the horse's mouth regarding the Victory Fund and what's that about and how does it help LGBT folks attain public office. And, you know, if we don't do it for ourselves, nobody is going to do it for us. So, then tomorrow night, should be a great show. We have Peter Toscano and Christine Bake. They are of the Beyond X Gay movement, our site. They are a collection of many people who have been through the whole X Gay therapy sessions, Exodus and the others like those, who spent thousands of dollars and their time, and they survived. So we'll be hearing from them. That will be tomorrow. Wednesday night, we have Jeremy Davis. He's the technical guru of the Blerico Project, which is one of the better gay blogs, the LGBT blogs. And we'll be talking with him about ways to use technology to get our message out. Jeremy is indeed a technical guru. Thursday night, we have Dr. Gates. Dr. Gates is a senior research fellow with the Williams Institute on Sexual Orientation, Law, and Public Policy. This should be an interesting guest. He is the guest, by the way, who has just compiled the statistics that we quoted the other evening. Example, Alabama has grown in terms of same-sex couples by over 800%. We'll be certainly curious about those numbers. Dr. Gates is also the co-author of the Gay and Lesbian Atlas. And so that will be coming up Thursday. And as I say, Friday is not booked, but I think we're going to try and get Denny on the phone to tell us about the New York parade. Oh, my. There's so much. You know, the guest is at 9:30, but and I have no idea where to begin. There's so many things I want to tell you about. You know, Bob's guest earlier, one of Bob's guests was talking about the fact that that Obama wears different faces for different people. That being the case, I think I may just start with the Obama story. As you recall, we've been talking about the fact that Obama had McClurkin, the African-American ex-gay Christian singer, at his rally. I believe that was South Carolina or North Carolina. I don't recall which. It's probably in the article. I just don't recall. But in any case, that was Obama wasn't even there. He appeared on a big screen television set. But the truth of the matter is that Donnie McClurkin was much more than just a singer. He was actually the master of ceremonies and spoke throughout the event and did a whole ex-gay testimony and the whole bit. And there was lots of outrage from the LGBT community about that, considering Obama's stance of support for the LGBT community, and it seemed to contradict. Nonetheless, they went ahead and left Donnie McClurkin in the show, and to counterbalance him, they put on a white Christian minister who was supposed to be gay-friendly, but they put him on at the very beginning of the show to be an invocation, to an opening prayer, an opening statement. He did this before the venue was even filled up. People were still trying to find their chairs. About half the people were probably there. So not many people even knew that. But he has written a response. He wrote this for the Blerico Project, and it is interesting. I'll read it to you. He says, over the last several weeks, the question of GLBT equality was placed on center stage by the appearance of Donnie McClurkin at one of my campaign events. McClurkin is a talented performer and a beloved figure among many African-Americans and Christians around the country. At the same time, he espouses beliefs about homosexuality that I completely reject. The events of the last several weeks are not the occasion that I would have chosen to discuss America's divisions on gay rights and my own deep commitment to GLBT equality. Now that the issue is before us, though, I do not intend to run away from it. These events have provided an important opportunity for us to confront a difficult fact. And he states this fact that there are good, decent, moral people in this country who do not yet embrace their brothers and sisters as full members of our shared community. As you know, we do have to have diplomats and politicians to try to reach out to those people. As far as I'm concerned, the folks who do not embrace their gay brothers and sisters, meaning they hate us, are not good, decent, and moral. But nonetheless, I understand the tone he is using and why he is using it. We will not secure full equality for all GLBT Americans until we learn how to address that deep disagreement and move beyond it. I don't know if it's so much of a disagreement as it is just pure plain ignorance, but nonetheless, I understand the reason for him using the word. To achieve that goal, we must state our beliefs boldly, bring the message of equality to audiences that have not yet accepted them, and listen to what those audiences have to say in return. This doesn't seem to jive with having an ex-gay, you can change, the lifestyle is evil, a fellow who ran his campaign event, but nonetheless, that's what he says. For my entire public career, I brought the message of GLBT equality to skeptical audiences as well as friendly ones. No other leading candidate in the race for presidency has demonstrated the same commitment to the principle of full equality. Note that he used the word leading candidate. That way he could leave out Kucinich. I support the full and unqualified repeal of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act. It should not have been a part of the law anyway. I'm summarizing now. I believe we should get rid of it altogether. Law should not discriminate against gay and lesbian couples. I'll fight to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Shouldn't have been passed anyway. And he'll work with the Defense Department. He's also, if he's president, he'll also use the presidency as a bully pulpit to urge states to treat same-sex couples with full equality, but still stands by letting the states decide on their own. That sounds like a nightmarish hodgepodge. He does make a great close, though. The American people have been poorly served. That was kind. Poorly served by two terms of administration that seeks to manipulate us through our fear and fear over national security, fear over immigrants, fear over gay and lesbian couples and loving relationships. Americans are yearning for leadership that will put an end to fear-mongering and instead empower us to once again reach for America. And, this is an inspiring. You recall his speech at the 2004 Democratic Convention, how inspiring that was. The closing paragraph is reminiscent of that. And he is, in fact, correct. Manipulating through fear. In fact, I have this came in late this afternoon, a couple of audio clips. You just got to hear this. This Tancredo nutcase, Pam at Pam's house, Plin, likes to refer to the whole scenario as the GOP clown car, which I think is very funny. Toot, toot. And she points out that Tancredo is certainly a certifiable occupant of this car. But in any case, I'm going to ask you to listen to, we're following this from the strange echo. I'll deal with it here in a second. I'll try to anyway. It's one of those echoes that that went away. Thank you. And so in any case, the Tancredo guy is talking about fear. Well, you got to hear this. This is the current Tancredo ad that he's trying to freak the people of Iowa out with. Bob, please run the clip called Tancredo.
According to FBI reports, Al-Qaeda may be planning to strike at shopping malls here in America later this year. And the candidates for president are talking about health care and energy policy? I'm Tom Tancredo, and I say all issues pale in comparison to the fact that Islamic jihadists are here and plotting our destruction. It's time for real leadership in Washington. I will secure our borders and ports. I will stop all visas to nations that sponsor terrorism and arrest and deport any alien who preaches violence and hatred, whether that's coming from a mosque or a street corner in a May Day parade. I'll prosecute those who provide sanctuary to anyone who would harm us, deport all those who do not belong here, and put the military on the border if necessary to keep them from coming back. Leadership is about more than taking action after an attack. It's about doing everything in your power to stop it. And I mean everything. This is Tom Tancredo, and I approve this ad because someone has to say it.
Paid for by Tancredo for a secure America. Call 1-888-GO-TOM-08 and ask for Rachel.
It's about doing everything in your power to stop it. Those brown people coming over the borders, and he says emphatically, and I mean everything, which includes, of course, taking away every one of your civil rights. Yes, Mr. Obama, the fear factor is still in play in this country, and it gets worse. Tancredo is not only currently running that radio commercial in Iowa, he's now running a television ad in Iowa. Please run that Tancredo TV, please.
Hi, I'm Tom Tancredo, and I approve this message because someone needs to say it.
There are consequences to open borders beyond the 20 million aliens who've come to take our jobs. Islamic terrorists now freely roam U.S. soil. Jihadists who fraught with hate here to do as they have in London, Spain, Russia. The price we pay for spineless politicians who refuse to defend our borders against those who come to kill.
Amazing, isn't it? I'm sure that will go over very well with the Condoleezza Rice crowd and with the Ann Coulter crowd, and it's right up their alley. You got to have that. Can you believe they're still trying to sell that stuff? You know, hike up your skirt, honey, and go sell in the street corner. We're all stocked up on that sort of thing here. He says, I say all issues pale in comparison, and blah, blah, blah. A very astute reader in this particular blog points out, I say all issues pale in comparison to the fact that the fundamentalist Christians are plotting to take over our country. And I couldn't agree with that listener more. Just amazes me. That's the latest. That just came in from you poor folks in Iowa are having to hear stuff like that on your television sets. And to make it even more interesting, Stormfront.org has endorsed Ron Paul. Do you remember when Ron Paul first announced? I think just about everybody in the country got an email. And you know, his plan sounded pretty good until you got down to the, you know, Republican part. But in any case, he's certainly showing his colors. Now, Stormfront.org is a white supremacy group, and not only does Stormfront.org endorse him, but also the White World News. I'm dreaming of a white world. Mm-hmm. They have actively supported Paul's bid for presidency, including offering the PayPal buttons to donate to his site. Stormfront.org is saying, once in a great while, a presidential candidate is presented to us. You know, that this makes me want to read it, is presented unto us once in a great while. A candidate who not only speaks for us, and this is white supremacists talking, but for us. I'm supporting Ron Paul in his run for presidency. The endorsement praises Paul's plan to reduce taxes, close the borders, and eliminate trade deals such as NAFTA. You know, say what you mean. That's not the reason you're supporting. The site goes on to say, and I quote, whatever organization you belong to, remember first and foremost that you are white. Oh, Jesus. That you're a white nationalist. Put your differences with one another aside and work together. Yeah, right. Work together and strive to get someone in the Oval Office who agrees with much of what we want for our future. Look at that man. Look at the issues. Look at our values. Look at our politicians having sex in men's rooms. Vote for Ron Paul in 2008. And there is another site, Vanguard Network News, a neo-Nazi fellow there, Todd Van Bibber, who was arrested and spent 5 years in a Florida prison for bombing or planning to bomb a dozen Orlando locations. Those were gay clubs and abortion clinics, as you might imagine. This site is also endorsing them. He's saying, I think I'm going to get in touch with the local Paul people and see if I can help. I'm serious about this shit. That's what he says. And ain't that America for you and me? you know, the reason that the white supremacists are so attracted to him goes back to some statements he made around 1992 as a political newsletter. He says that opinion polls show that about 5% of blacks have sensible opinions. That's tantamount to saying 5% of women wear sensible shoes. But they have sensible opinions on the free market and individual liberty and the end of welfare. And then the next statement he made in 1992, we are constantly told that it is evil to be afraid of black men. No, no one is telling you that. Be afraid if you want to. It's your problem. It'll only hurt you. It's the hate that we don't like. But he claims we're constantly told that it is evil to be afraid of black men. It's hardly irrational, though. Black men commit murders and rapes and robberies of my and muggings and burglaries, all out of proportion to their numbers. And, of course, the homosexuals steal your children out of proportion to their numbers. Also, we are much like gypsies in that respect. Now, all due respect and apologies to the gypsies. Ron Paul also said, we don't think a child of 13 should be held responsible as a man of 23. He says, that's true for most people, but black males who have been raised to join criminal gangs are as big, strong, tough, scary, culpable as any adult, and they should be treated as such. Meaning, of course, that black 13-year-olds should go to the electric chair, and white 13-year-olds, when they get out of line, should, of course, go to the criminal justice system for children, you know, the kiddie system. He's not fond of Jews either. He's saying the most powerful lobby in Washington is the Israeli government. I thought that was us, though. It's hard to keep track. I could have sworn that we were the most powerful lobby in Washington and that we had all the money. But apparently that is not the case. Oh, yeah, I want to tell you this story. The only gay bar, the only one in Jerusalem, has now closed. They called it the Jalem. That was a slang name for it, J-L-E-N, the Jalem for Jerusalem Gay Bar. I operated for about 4 years. The real name is the Shushan Pub, and it was Jerusalem's only lesbian and gay bar. And it's an interesting fact that's pointed out here. Shushan is the only place in Israel where ultra-Orthodox Jews, Arabs, and religious secularists could sit together and have a good time. That is rather typical of gay bars and lesbian bars. You know, we have, you know, we're knocked over so many ways, and we're like weevils, we don't fall down. We're knocked over and beat up so many ways that, you know, little things like being an ultra-Orthodox Jew sitting next to an Arab doesn't mean that much anymore when you sit down in a club like that. Anyway, the owner, who also serves on the Jerusalem City Council, says that the people came and they enjoyed it, and when they left, they each returned to their own ghetto. It was clear that they were looking for a place where they could be themselves, and this is the only place they could find it other than staying home in their homes and coming out to this place. The bar was pretty much allowed to operate unhindered. It was arson. There was arson a couple of years ago, and they rebuilt it. And when the gay pride parades come along, there are 8 extra police patrols. But he's saying that he's closing it because he's nearing 40 now, and he's you know, has other interests. He probably just doesn't feel like putting up the pressure anymore. But one of the fellows who normally attended that his name is Adam. He was stabbed by one of the ultra-Orthodox types back in the 2005 parade. That's the LGBT Pride Parade. He says, I met my partner at this club. He says, it's warm and safe and friendly, and it's a haven, whereas Jerusalem is surrounded on all sides by hatred and venom and vitriol. So the safe spot, in fact, in Jerusalem is now gone, the only LGBT club. And that's a shame. But maybe they'll get another one soon. Shame to be relegated to bars and nightclubs, but, you know, that's a hell of a lot better than nothing, isn't it? So, as we come up on the break, you're listening to Strictly Confidential, a toll-free 877, the number 4 head-on. I am your host, Peter Godbold, streaming exclusively on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Yeah, my name is Good to You.
This is Billy Shears. Join us this Thursday on Foxed Up at his new time, 12 midnight, following nighttime Cup of Joe. We'll take a look at the King, Elvis Presley.
The first car I ever bought was the most beautiful car I've ever seen. It was secondhand, but I parked it outside of my hotel the day I got it and sat up all night just looking at it.
Be there this Thursday on Foxed Up at his new time, 12 midnight, right here on the Head On Radio Network, and find out what happened to that car.
I say, oh, meet me in a hurry behind the bar. Don't you be afraid, and I'll do you no harm. I want you to bring along my rocking shoes, cause tonight I'm going to rock away.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Janine Marks, a 12-year-old, was fairly normal. She spent a lot of time online. One day, she met a new friend. The new friend had the same problems at home. They liked the same bands. They worried about the same subjects in school. They promised to keep each other's secrets. They wished they went to the same junior high. The new friend had good news. He said he was going to be in Janine's area one Saturday. He thought it would be amazing if they could just hang out, go to the mall. Janine agreed. The new friend didn't want parents messing this up. Janine showed up alone. So did her new friend, who wasn't in junior high, wasn't nice, and wasn't a 14-year-old boy. Last year, 1 in 5 children was sexually solicited online. Help delete online predators. Call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com to learn how to protect your kids' online life. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
And we're back for the second half hour of Strictly Confidential. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4, head-on. That's 877-443-2366. Or if you have unlimited long distance, you could use 304-658-3333. That rings in West Virginia and saves the studio a nickel or a buck. I do try to check email during the breaks. The mail arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. As I told you earlier, our guest is joining us now at the bottom of the hour. Our guest, we are very pleased to have, he's joining us actually in a very, very busy time. They are about to have their annual conference coming up, I believe, in less than 2 weeks. We'll certainly want to know about that and all the other things that are going on. We've had from the Victory Fund Kevin Beckner, Jeff Anderson, Fred Mason, and Howard Bayless in the past, who are all candidates who were assisted and coached by the Victory Fund, and it's, as I said earlier, time to hear straight from the horse's mouth. Dennis Dyson is the Vice President of Communication at the Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund, which is, of course, the nation's leading organization, which identifies and trains openly LGBT and transgender candidates. Mr. Dyson spent 12 years at the Bureau of National Affairs, publisher of legal and regulatory news information, and most recently he worked at Smart Brief, where he was the founding editor of Gay and Lesbian Leadership Smart Brief, a twice-weekly publication of the Gay and Lesbian Leadership Institute. And he is a graduate of the University of North Florida, which is in Jacksonville, Florida, just down the road from here. And he resides in Washington, D.C. Dennis, thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy week and joining us.
Peter, thanks very much for having me. I'm glad to be on the show.
I'm glad to have you here. And, you know, we've really enjoyed having the guests on that have come to us via the Victory Fund, or at least we located them on the Victory Fund. It would be impossible to locate these people without you. You know, these are many times local races or statewide races. So, you know, doing this show from North Florida, your site is immensely important to me. And thank you for doing what you do. Tell us, the conference is the big thing coming up. Maybe you'd like to start and tell us about the conference, and then we'll get into about the history of the Victory Fund.
Sure. You know, I was just listening to your show the other night with Howard Bayless of Birmingham, Alabama, who has just won his election. He was telling you a little bit about the conference, which is actually a program of the Leadership Institute, which is our kind of training and education arm. Every year, the conference brings together a few hundred, pardon me, I'm dealing with cold here, a few hundred openly gay elected and appointed officials from across the country. Last year we held it in Houston, Texas, and this year it is in Las Vegas. It'll be our biggest conference ever. There's probably 300 people attending so far, and that, again, is coming up in a couple of weeks. But they'll get together for a couple of days of training and workshops and panels to talk about what openly gay elected and appointed officials are doing in their communities and how they can get the legislation passed and stop some bad legislation. They talk about the political landscape for the coming year, a lot of policy panels and have you. It's actually a great conference, and it's a good time for these people to reconnect every year.
Well, I've looked over the results of the 2006 conference, and apparently, even though there are not as many people there, I think, what, around 200 or so were there in 06, you had some pretty impressive speakers there.
Yeah, and in last year we had Howard Dean, pardon me again, who was just coming off quite a big win in the 2006 midterm election. He came and spoke to us, and this was just a couple of weeks after the elections, so it was great to have him come and sort of crow a little bit. But he, at that conference, he called for more participation in politics by openly gay people, openly LGBT people, I should say. And there were a number of people of that stature there. This year, we're going to have similarly some bright lights in the LGBT community, from everybody from Ambassador James Hormel, who was the first openly gay ambassador in the U.S., to people like we've got some journalists coming who are openly gay to moderate some panels. Jonathan Capehart of the Washington Post, John Yang of NBC News. So it's a great collection of people that come together every year, and the conference is growing.
Well, it's very impressive. You know, we're talking about Howard a second ago. Howard had indicated to us that he went to the leadership training. What do you do? What do you teach the people? How do you begin with someone who's interested in being a candidate?
You know, when I first started at the Victory Fund, which was about a year and a half ago now, one of the very first things I did is went through this training. It's our sort of our signature training for candidates, and not only candidates, but people who want to work on the campaign of openly gay candidates. It is really an intense 4-day laboratory style class where we take people through the nuts and bolts of a campaign. One way I describe it is, you know, campaigning politics is both art and science. Everybody understands the art of it, which is campaigning and sort of the romantic view of what a campaign is. balloons and shaking hands and kissing babies and giving speeches. The reality is there's another side to politics, which is the science of it. This course teaches people the sort of hard and cold truth about campaigning, what it takes to win. And there's a lot that people never, ever would think goes into a campaign on that side of it that really is the most important part of it, is the part that determines who's going to win. A lot of people come to us on the Victory Fund side and ask for our endorsement. And one of the first things we'll ask them is, would you consider going through this training first, if they haven't run for office before? And some of them are reluctant because they think, well, you know, I'm popular in my community and people like me and everyone tells me I'm going to win if I run. But we impress upon them, until you really understand what it means to run and to win, you really can't imagine it. And people come out of it, and I believe when I was listening to Howard, he described it pretty well. He came out with a newfound appreciation for what it takes. And the interesting part of it is some people come out like Howard, pumped and ready to work and ready to run. And other people leave and say, you know what, I had no idea this was what it took, and it's not for me. So it's a really good way to sort of to weed out people who should be running and people who shouldn't.
I agree. That's the other result of it's not for me is just as valid as it is for me. Obviously, we want to have, if we're going to do anything, we have to do it ourselves. We want people who are able to get through it. I noticed one of the statements that was made in the training, in some of the material I've looked through, is a personal assessment of, you know, about your past and anything that you might have in your past, because the rule of thumb is that if there's anything, they will find it and use it against you. Now, of course, just right, but just being who you are is used against us in the LGBT community. I assume you mean like criminal records or something like that?
Oh, everything. I mean, these days, with the information availability the way it is, anybody who's running for office, if they don't do a very hard look at themselves before they run, they're really going to start behind, you know, at a disadvantage, because people will find it. Whether you have employed a nanny or you know, gotten a speeding ticket, people will find it.
Well, you know, that's advice that a lot of the congressmen should have been trained for years ago. You know, things are coming out every day. These huge, you really should have helped them too. But I'm curious about the gay Republican wins Doraville City Council seat. Now, this is huge because it's the first elected trans official. Is it the first elected trans official ever?
Well, let me say there were two different races there. There was in Doraville, Georgia, which is just outside of Atlanta, there was an openly gay Republican who is a male, and he won. He's the first openly gay Republican elected in the state. A separate race, which is in Riverdale, Georgia, another suburb outside of Atlanta, there was a transgender candidate, Michelle Bruce, who was an incumbent, and she was running to keep her seat, and she has made it to a runoff election. In Georgia, if you don't get 50% of the vote, then you go to a runoff. So there were four or five candidates running in her race, and she got certainly the top vote getter, but she'll have to run in a runoff election sometime in December. So Atlanta's an interesting case. There are multiple openly gay elected officials in and around Atlanta. It's become sort of a hotbed for gay politics there. With people on the city council and just outside of the city, all around it.
Well, there's only a small list of states at this point in time that do not have an elected official. Now, I understand we've gone, when Victory Fund first started, there were only about 40. By the way, what year did Victory Fund start?
It was in 1991, and it was started largely by board members on the Human Rights Campaign. Back then, the Human Rights Campaign Fund, it was called HRCF. They decided that there was a need for an organization to focus solely on increasing the number of gay people who were in office around the country, because they saw that as another path to equality, really, to getting things done and to stopping the worst of things from being done. And they thought if you had somebody sitting on a dais next to straight colleagues, it would change people. It would change their minds about what gay people were really like. So when they started in 1991, there were 49 openly gay elected officials identified throughout the U.S. Today, that number is just about to pass 400. So in 16 years' time, we've gone up about 800%. With a long way to go still. There are 511,000 elective offices in the United States, so we have a lot of room to grow.
Regarding the log cabin Republicans, now, you know, I understand we're putting, you know, the LGBT folks in office, and I understand that a lot of them feel that they want to take the Republican Party back from these, well, I don't have many good words to say, but from these people, shall we say. Do you deal very often with elections that involve gay Republicans or lesbian Republicans?
It is certainly the minority, the vast minority of our endorsements. It's just a little harder for Republicans to get through their primary processes and to sort of get the backing of their party. One place where that was an exception in this cycle was in Columbus, Ohio, where there was a Republican who got the backing of his party for a spot on the Columbus City Council, which is 100% Democrat. So it was a long shot, and he was not successful, but we did endorse him. And there have been a couple of other, there were three or four endorsed Republicans in this cycle. But we work closely with the Log Cabin national leadership structure to, and that's one way that they're trying to change their party is by getting gay Republicans to run for office. And they've been great in partnering with us on trainings and things of that nature. But it is still overwhelmingly Democrat, both who are endorsed by us and elected eventually.
Well, it's just, for me, I spend so much time talking about the evil things the Republican Party does. It's hard for me to imagine a good Republican, but if there was ever a good Republican, it's probably a log cabin one, is all I can say to you. Certainly they've been kicked around enough to get it.
You know, I have some friends for Republicans. It sounds like Republicans talking about gay people. I have a number of good friends here in Washington who are Republicans, and they've had a really hard time of it in this administration, explaining to their friends why they're still Republicans. But, I believe in a bipartisan approach to the issues that are important to the LGBT community, and I think we are not going to win solely with Democrats, because half the country isn't. If there are good people of goodwill who believe that they can help our movement, I think we shouldn't worry about what party they're in. I myself am a Democrat, but Victory Fund and the Leadership Institute are both nonpartisan organizations, and we're looking for people who believe that they can help. Beyond certain issues, it's just incumbent upon people to do what they can within their own power structures to help us advance, and I think people can do that no matter what party they're in.
Well, you're certainly in a better position to know than I would be, because I'll have to be honest with you, I've not had a log cabin Republican on the show. It seems to me, though, that I should. And in fact, I believe I'll have to surf the victoryfund.org. By the way, the site, folks, is victoryfund.org. That's victory, FUND.org. We are publishing that link in the chat room. It's actually at strictlyconfidentialradio.com if you'd like to stop by the site. I strongly encourage you to. You'll get a idea very quickly of what's going on around the country. But I really should have a log cabin Republican on this show. You know, people tend to beat up things they don't know, and obviously I don't know a lot about that. So, we've just come through the an election. You know, the November, early November is fairly huge. So you're not only coming off a very busy time, you're going into the conference, which is another busy time. How did we fare in the elections that just went down in November?
We had 71 endorsed candidates in 2007. And so far, 41 of them have won their elections. And I say so far because we still have three or four that are outstanding. One, they're doing recounts, and then a couple of three others, they're still runoffs to go. So at the very least, we'll have 41 of 71 victorious, which is about average for an odd-numbered year when there aren't federal elections. That compares with last year where we had 88 endorsed and 67 won. So it was a fairly good showing. There are the offices where people are running in the odd years tend to be more municipal than statewide or federal. We are making smaller gains, but still important ones. There were the mayor of Ferndale, Michigan, now openly gay. The mayor of Maywood, New Jersey, now openly gay. There were a number of city councils that have their very first openly gay city council people. Duluth, Minnesota is one of them. Jeffrey Anderson. Excuse me. Certainly Doraville, Georgia is one of them. And these are places where people just being themselves, being unafraid, can really make a difference. I was struck by Howard, by your conversation with Howard, where he was talking about the fact that his sexual orientation did not come up in his race for Birmingham Board of Education. And one of the things he didn't say, but I thought to myself, well, the reason is because Howard is about as out as you can be. He has been a gadfly in that state for years as a chair of Equality Alabama, and so involved and so outspoken and in the press that certainly if people were going to choose something to pick on Howard Bayless about or to try to bring him down, it's not because he is closeted. It's because he's out there as out and loud and proud as anybody could be. And when he ran for school board, what could they say about that? Yeah.
Well, he was a delightful guest. He had me in stitches at one point. He said, if you Google my name, it's just going to come up big queer. And I thought, okay, I am following you now, Howard. I understand. Oh, what a delightful person he was.
I tell you, when if the history of the gay civil rights movement in the South is written, he will be one of the big names. He is a trailblazer and has been for a long time.
Well, he's a very interesting person. It's certainly a very sincere person, a great sense of humor. I'm noticing amongst the polls, the actual percentage of votes that went toward candidates that you have endorsed, when they win, they tend to win pretty big. 70%, 80% in their favor. That's interesting. Does that have to do with the district that they're in or with the seat they're running for? Or am I putting this together? Tell me about that.
It does. A lot of our candidates, their real race is in the primary. So they tend to come from a progressive district to start with. And then, so what they've got to do is win their primary, and then a lot of the time there are no surprises on election day. And one example is Pittsburgh has their first openly gay city council person, and Bruce Krause. We really spent a lot of time and energy and money on his primary race, and he ousted an incumbent who was backed by the Democratic Party machine and was dealt with some really, really nasty anti-gay campaigning towards the end. Not just campaigning, but crime. There were bricks thrown through windows and leafleting in front of Catholic churches, and it got very ugly, but he handily beat his Democratic incumbent that he was running against, because I think people were just fed up with that sort of politicking. And then in the general election, he faced only token opposition, because Republicans tend not to win that seat that he was running for. So, that happens a lot, where our toughest opponents tend to be in the primary, and unless there is a nonpartisan election like we saw in Fort Worth, Texas, where we still have a runoff election to go.
Regarding endorsing a candidate, what is the process? How would one contact you, and what is the criteria? How do you base it on points? Do they write? Do they talk about their lives? Is it a questionnaire? What is your criteria? It seems to be that that would be a tough one.
It's a fairly extensive and time-consuming process, and people are surprised when they first apply that we want to know so much about them and so much about their campaign plans. Some may even find it invasive, but the reason that we do that is because we have a national network of donors, and they wait to see who we endorse when they decide where they're going to spend their political dollars. So we want to be able to put people up in front of our donors who have been thoroughly vetted, and by that, we want to make sure that this is not sort of a quixotic run for office, that they have experience, they have deep roots in their community, people know who they are, they have a plan to win, they have a plan to raise money, they have a media plan, and they're serious about this. We're not in the business of stroking people's ego who have fantasies about running for office. We're in the business of winning. And unless we think somebody has a viable shot at winning, we're not going to endorse them. And we've been criticized for that in the community. There are people who think we should endorse any gay person who seeks our endorsement. But we think of ourselves more of as a professional political organization. We think that the community, the movement, deserves one. And we're not here just to make ourselves feel better. It's really to produce results. And so that process is as vigorous, I think, as it should be.
Well, I have to agree with your take on it. Certainly, there are only so many dollars to go around, and certainly they shouldn't be spent on what would look like a hopeless race. And, you know, I get it about why some people would think it's intrusive. I mean, obviously, you have to know everything they did since they were 12, pretty much, to have a clue of what's going to come out. And speaking of funding and so many dollars to go around, how do you do your funding? I've noticed that some of your donors are fairly are very generous. Like, you know, some anonymous gifts are fairly large. And do you do grassroots fundraising also, or is it primarily wealthier LGBT folks? I don't understand how you do funding. Nothing's free.
Right. We actually do two things for candidates. We are a political action committee, so we can give them a check from our PAC. Up to the amount that's allowed in their local jurisdiction. Sometimes there's unlimited. You can do unlimited, and sometimes it's very small limits. California, for instance, has very small limits that people can accept from PACs and individuals. The other thing we do is we will bundle for candidates. So our donors, you know, let's say there is a $500 limit on an individual gift to a campaign. We can ask our donors to give as much as they can, and if there are a number of people giving $500 through our website, it is still going directly into the candidate's account, but we are able to tap a network that they don't have access to typically. So there's bundling and there's the individual PAC checks. In terms of raising money for the fund itself so that we can write these PAC checks, we get them from large donors and small donors. We do the same thing that everybody does in trying to raise money for their nonprofit, which is, you know, direct mail and the people who bother you at dinner time on the phone, and there are, you know, email campaigns and what have you. But we will beg, borrow, and steal to get money to fund the PAC to help races that need it most.
Well, one thing I will say about looking through, you're very open about your numbers and about how much is spent of your income toward the candidates versus how much it costs to run the organization. Apparently, you're incredibly efficient. It seems to me that the huge bulk of the money does go to the candidates and their campaigns.
That's right. We have one of the lowest, I know of, we have one of the lowest administrative and fundraising costs among LGBT nonprofits. I think it is in the neighborhood of 18% of all money raised goes to administrative and fundraising costs, and the rest of it is directly spent on programs. We're lucky, and we have a pretty substantial impact for an organization of our size in terms of employees. We have about 16 staff in Washington, and that's it. board member and volunteers. So we're happy that we can have the impact that we have, and given the size that we are.
Well, kudos to you for reaching that low percentage rate. It's not easy to do the way things are today. And I notice your board is spread out all over the country. Do you meet by teleconferencing? How does your board meet?
We do meet a couple of times a year in person, but board members all pay their own way. You know, it's a volunteer board, and people have a minimum amount that they are responsible for raising if they are members of the board. But on top of that, they pay their own travel fees, and they're an amazing board, and it is largely a professional group of people who know politics and really believe in the mission. So we're quite fortunate to have them.
I'm wondering how you're doing with the right wing. I constantly am, you know, looking through like the American Family Association stuff and the Dobson stuff, and try to figure out, you know, who they're shooting at today and who they're going to be shooting at tomorrow and talking about. It seems to me you're fairly effectively flying under the radar. Is that true? Have you been attacked? And how do you be as big and influential as you are and not be chewed up by those people?
Well, it's interesting. We are about to I have a feeling that protection is going away. More and more people are understanding who we are and what we're doing, and we are facing these state groups. They call themselves by various names. They are all loosely affiliated, at least at their founding, with Focus on the Family. In Indiana, for instance, it's called Indiana Family Action. In North Carolina, it's called North Carolina Family Council. And they're setting up, and they're looking at races that we're endorsing in, and they're spending money then on opponents. We had a race last year in 2006 in northern Indiana for the sheriff of Gary, I believe it was, if not the county surrounding it. And I'm a little fuzzy here. The woman running, her name was Tina Taviano. She was a veteran of the sheriff's department there.
Yes.
We saw an ad against her. It was really for her opponent, and it's amazing. They spent a ton of money on this ad, and it was almost completely funded by the Indiana Family Action. So we're starting to see more attention being paid to us, but I think one of the reasons that you don't see the right wing attacking us so much is that we're not a lobbying organization. So unlike the Human Rights Campaign or even Equality Florida, we're not at the state capitol or in Washington lobbying legislators on a particular bill. All we do, and it's a finite mission, is to fund candidates who, you know, can lend their voice to these issues. So we're not out there telling candidates what we want them to say or making them subscribe to a particular list of agenda items. So in that way, maybe they don't see us as much of a threat, but I think we're starting to see them realize that, wow, if gay people actually start playing politics, we've got a much bigger fight in our hands.
Well, I think I might have asked Howard about this because it's something that stuck in my mind. It's a news story that we did a couple of months ago, and that is that one of the ways the our enemies, if you will, are trying to divide us and to minimalize us is to, especially in states like Alabama, is to tell the black community that we are, in fact, our goal is to take over the seats that they have so hard won. I think the way the article read was that our goal is to put a rainbow flag over every seat that is being currently held by a black person. Has that come up? Did you know that? And has that come up? Has that been a problem, especially in places like Alabama?
I have not seen any sort of systematic discussion of that. I will say that there are a couple of races I have seen in my time at Victory where, unfortunately, the issues have devolved to ones of race, and it is because there are certain districts where when you see gentrification, you see gay people moving into a traditionally African-American neighborhood, and you start to see the demographics change in the neighborhood, then somebody who is sort of a neighborhood activist who may be white and gay tends to run. There's a little bit of tension there, and I think you might see that more and more in the future. But it is certainly unfortunate and not in any systematic way happening. But it does happen from time to time, and when those things happen, it does unfortunately sometimes pit the gay community against the black community or another minority community, and we have to be vigilant about that. And one of the ways we're doing that is really aggressively looking for minority candidates who are LGBT, and it is something that I think that the gay community in general looks towards more diversification and diversity in color as well as in sexual orientation. And that's certainly something that we pay attention to.
Well, we had a great time speaking with Fred Mason, who was running for Baltimore City Council. Not only was he a great guest, he shared many interesting details about Baltimore and the city. He was from Baltimore. Fred, it was successful in his election, I hope?
He was not. Baltimore City. He was running again. His election was largely in the primary. And he was running up against a candidate who was much better funded and not only the darling of the party, but really of every major politician in Maryland, it seemed like. I mean, that guy was marching down the street with the governor on election day, very popular governor, Martin O'Malley. So Fred had an uphill battle, and unfortunately he came in second in a crowded field of 9 candidates for the Democratic slot in that race. He really had an amazing showing for somebody who had never run for public office before, and I dare say we will see much more of Fred Mason in the future.
Well, he's someone I would like to have back on the show. He was a great guest. And along these lines also, you reference an organization on your website, the Tyrone Garner Fellows Program, which I have only seen referenced one other time on another site and looked, it's an organization that I am very interested in approaching to have someone as a guest on the show. What is their affiliation with you, and can you tell us about the organization and how you interact?
This is with the National Black Justice Coalition, which is headed by Alexander Robinson. And the fellowship is so that there is, it goes to a person of color who will be able to participate in some of the trainings that the Leadership Institute does. And so we're working with NBJC, and we have worked with them in the past on trainings to co-sponsor them, and there's another one coming up in 2008. I don't know where it will be or what the date is, but it is going to be a training for LGBT people of color that they are co-sponsoring with us. They're a great organization based here in Washington, and they are really the leading black gay organization in the United States. I would encourage you to talk to them because there are some great people there, but Alexander is a great leader.
Well, from what I have seen of them, it was fairly new to me. I just did not realize they exist, and then when I see them again mentioned on your site, it certainly makes me more and more curious about them. How long have they been around?
I don't believe it has been very long. I don't know the answer to that, but I know that they are, I believe their site is at nbjc.org. They were instrumental around the time of the Million Man March here in Washington and trying to get a gay person represented on the dais when people were speaking there, and that was quite a controversy at the time. They do amazing work with black churches. They have a National Black Church Summit to talk about LGBT issues.
Wonderful. That's great news.
And we partner with them quite a lot, and they're close with us.
Well, I'm certainly going to be putting them on my hit list to see if I can. I would be delighted to have someone from them, from that organization, the show. Now, did Mr. I'm sorry, I put the name down here. Here we go. Did Mr. Mason come to you through that organization, the Baltimore fellow who is running? And do they recommend people?
They were also working really hard in his race, and I know that they are interested in seeing the number of black LGBT candidates increase. And so it's a great partnership that we can work with people who are close with that community and can recommend people to us, and we're able to help those candidates.
I notice in your 2006 conference, and by the way, where was that located?
In Houston, Texas.
Houston. Not only did you have Howard Dean and another a list of impressive folks, Tammy Baldwin, Barney Frank, etc., you had Pam Spaulding from Pam's House Blend, who is a wonderful source of information for this show. It's impossible to prepare 2 hours of news and events every evening without relying on people like Pam to find these things out. Do you have people in the LGBT media, like bloggers, in your conference this year? Is this something that you normally do? I was very impressed that you had her.
Yeah, she will, as a matter of fact, she will be back in Las Vegas, and she's going to be on a panel about the media there. We also have people like Kevin Knapp of the Washington Blade. He's the editor of the Washington Blade. He will be on the same panel as Pam this year. Keith Boykin, who was unfortunately had to drop out today, but we almost had him at the conference. And people in the mainstream media too. Jonathan Capehart, the Washington Post, I think, Netta Ulda from the Public Radio, and John Yang of NBC News, who was at the White House, but I believe now he's following the Giuliani campaign around. So we sort of are able to, we have, you know, being in Washington is great in some ways and not great in others, but one of the great ways is we have access to a lot of these really fantastic journalists and people in town who are able to help us out on the conference and fly halfway across the country for us. So.
Well, I thought that was great that you had someone from that level. You know, there's the none of us are really mainstream media people. We all do the best we can. For instance, I guess I represent the LGBT community on this network, and Pam and Joe Bygod and Balerico, represent us in the among many others, of course, in the blogging department. So I was thrilled that you were that plugged in to include her. Earlier, you mentioned a candidate who had been subject to a huge anti-gay smear. Now, was that Joel Burns, the one from Fort Worth?
He was, indeed. There were a couple of instances of that in this cycle, but Joel, he had one opponent who had a supporter who was a sitting member of the Fort Worth City Council, and at a Republican women's luncheon, actually had a video or audio recording of this, which was put up on the Fort Worth Star-Telegram website. This gentleman who was on the city council was introducing him and started making fun of Joel Burns' sexual orientation and saying, you know, one of the people in this race is homosexual, and it's not the guy I'm about to introduce to you. So there was a lot of tittering and laughing in the audience. It was kind of ugly. That got a lot of play in the gay blog world and the press, that in turn really propelled people to go and give to Joel's campaign. So, and you know, having the right wing wackos use someone's sexual orientation against them in a campaign is sort of a double edged sword. In some ways, it's ugly and terrible. In other ways, they're ridiculously stupid to do it because it gets people fighting mad, and they write big checks to candidates who are under attack like that. Sometimes.
You know, it is a difficult tightrope to walk these days as we become more and more visible, you know, which is really what they would much rather us do. If we could just be herded back into the closet, things would be so much easier for them. But I don't think anybody's headed back is the problem they're having.
This particular instance produced an editorial by the Fort Worth Star-Telegram on the same day or the next day that they covered the story, really, really harshly calling out this Republican city council member for doing that. That, I believe, is a first for that. that newspaper. And so it's kind of, we are seeing a change, certainly in the editorial boards, in attitudes towards gay candidates and in attitudes towards people who would use sexual orientation against a candidate. And it's heartening to see.
Tell us about the board, if you would. Not all of them, but are there names on the board that we would know and recognize that have come to you from other LGBT organizations, or do you tend to get fresh people who are about? I'm just curious about the board. They're spread out. I know that they're all over the place.
It really is pretty diverse. So there are people who are well known in political circles who are on the board. We don't tend to get a lot of board hoppers from one board to the next, but certainly our board chair, Paul Horning, who is Atlanta-based, he has been on, I mean, he's well-known in Atlanta for his philanthropy and for his work on boards. He's very tied in with HRC as well. On our Leadership Institute board, people like Kathy Woolard, who was the first openly gay person ever elected in the state of Georgia. She was Atlanta City Council president. You know, pretty well known. And there are people like that on the board. But it is not something that everybody would understand who they are. But in political circles and in the LGBT civil rights community, some of the names are quite big.
Well, and one other question. The president, I believe his name is Wolf. Do I have that right?
Chuck Wolf, right.
Chuck Wolf, yes, I didn't have it in front. I don't always remember things that well during a show, but Mr. Wolf, is he like a founding member, or did you elect the president? I'm wondering how did you all hook up to do this? There must be some stories there about how you all found each other and whose brainchild this was. It's an amazing idea.
It really was the brainchild of a few founding members who were, at that time, members of the board of HRCF. Some of the names you might know are Terry Dean, Vic Basil, and Hillary Rosen were all instrumental. And they are really at the top of the list of some longtime gay activists and power players, both in Washington and elsewhere. Terry Dean lives in Portland, Oregon. But those people came together in 91 to start this and started growing the board. In 1991, they endorsed one person, Sherry Harris, who was an out African-American lesbian. She was running for Seattle City Council, and she won her race. So that was their first success story, and it has grown since then. But Chuck, who was actually on the board for years, when they were looking for their next executive director, they had gone out and done a search and ultimately settled on one of their own in Chuck, and he's been running the organization now for a little over 4 years. Really took it from a sub-million-dollar organization. Now we're up to about an annual budget of about $4.5 million, and obviously the success of the political mission speaks for itself.
Well, I'm so thrilled to see that when you say that you are assisting the LGBT community to public office, you really do mean T, because of course I've had several transgendered guests on the show, and we've really learned a lot. I was horrified at how ignorant I was before I had these guests on the show, and I'll point out that our listeners, we have a large number of straight folks or progressive straight folks. We have an LGBT audience too. But all of us learned a hell of a lot from this. But and you're actually is Michelle Bruce and all the other person from Doraville, are those the only two transgendered folks? And do you find interest from transgendered to enter office?
Well, I want to be clear: the Brian Bates in Doraville, Georgia, is not transgendered. So it's only the only transgender candidate we had this cycle was Michelle Bruce.
I'm confused. Thank you.
That's okay. Last year in 2000. Six, we had a transgender candidate running for the Maryland State Legislature, Dana Beyer, and she was unfortunately not successful, but very accomplished woman. She's a surgeon, retired surgeon, and I think we'll hear more from her in the future. She's staying very involved in politics. But yeah, I mean, they are still few and far between as candidates go, but we are aggressively looking for transgender individuals who want to serve, and there are a handful of them serving across the country now, in various locations, I believe. And besides Riverdale, there is a transgender city council, or an alderman, they call it, in Missouri. I am going to blank completely on the name of the town now. I have just completely lost the name of the town.
You're in good company.
Really, just a handful about transgender candidates.
Do you have any transgendered on the board? No, I mean, not that you would have to, but I'm just curious.
We do not currently, no.
Well, I'm just very impressed. Now, I noticed, I did not click on it, but at your website, victoryfund.org, there is actually a button near the top of the page where people can click to fill out the application or at least start the ball rolling. What do they find there? A general questionnaire, or do they get the whole questionnaire there?
They find the whole questionnaire right now. There are many more steps beyond that questionnaire, but that's the first step. We are about to, literally within days, launching the complete online version of our application process, so you will be able to create a username and password and go back to the site to complete not only that application questionnaire, but many more pieces of the application process, save your work, and just log in and come back to it any time. That will help us tremendously from a labor standpoint, but it's also going to help people who are applying to be able to quit the application process and not lose anything. So they'll be that will be rolled out in the next week, probably. We've been working on that hard, but it is it's the best way to do this is to start online at victoryfund.org. And you can also get some resources on the Leadership Institute site, which is GLLI.org, which stands for Gay and Lesbian Leadership Institute. And there's information there about the trainings and about what it takes, really, to run.
What is the state's project?
That is a project that is evolving right now, but it is, in the past, it has been the Leadership Institute's work with groups who are state groups like Equality Alabama or Equality Florida. We do that with them to help them learn how to start political action committees in their own states, to help them learn how to build their capacity to create change, both through electing openly gay candidates to their state legislatures, say, or to local boards and city councils. So the state groups send staff to come through and learn from professionals who know, for instance, tax law behind opening a PAC. And that training has really, really helped a lot of states build their capacity. One of the success stories is Utah. Equality Utah sat down with us and really went through a long-term plan to help build the capacity to make change there. And one of the ways they chose to do that is through getting people elected. They now have three members of their state legislature, both in the Senate and the House, who are openly LGBT. And for Utah, which is, you know, one of the reddest of the red, that's saying something.
Well, I have to agree. Also, I've been around the great gay community for a long time. Traditionally, in the past, the folks from Utah tended to treat their LGBT children the worst of most of the groups. I say that because I can't begin to tell you how many gay men I have met, especially when I was living in the Pacific Northwest, whose story is that they were kicked out on the street when they were 16 or 17. I understand that's changing now. Brigham Young University has changed their the fact that you need to be kicked out versus you can stay rules. And perhaps it's got to do with the elected officials. It's these things are snowballing. I can't begin to tell you how thrilled I was to find your organization, and I continue to use it to look at guests. I want you to know that you are more than welcome to contact me at any time if you feel it would be useful for one of the candidates to be on the show, and I will
That's
do
very
it.
Helpful.
I don't care if they're running for dog catcher, and I really don't, because I just, you know, for so many years we've asked, what can we do? And the answer is always, get involved at the grassroots. So, you know, whatever this network can do to support that, we certainly want to do. In closing, you know, I've asked you so many questions. You've been so patient. I know you have a bad cold. I know you're busy. You're a saint for being on the show.
I apologize for being in front of all your listeners.
Don't you see, the trick is I have an on-off button for my microphone, so I can cheat when I have a but I don't have one for you. But the thing is, in closing, what would you say to someone who's thinking about running for an office, someone who's encouraged by someone else in their community perhaps, or state who's run, or someone who's listening to this show or has come across the Victory Fund? What advice would you give?
I think the first thing would be to if you're really interested in running, you should contact us. We have essentially in our within side of our organization, we have the country split up into caucuses, and we assign somebody to really be the keep their ear to the ground in that area of the country and those states, to find people who are interested in running, to be a resource for those who have decided that they might be interested in running. And we can get you in touch with that person who will really sort of pay special attention to you and walk you through the process. The most important thing is to realize that you don't have to do it alone. There are people who want to see you elected to office. There are people who want to give money to your campaign. There are people who want to train you how to run. And the reason is not because there is a great agenda in the sky we want you to enact. It is simply because we think that if there are people of goodwill who are smart, who are committed, who love their communities and want to change them, that they deserve a level playing field if they're openly gay. They don't need to fear running because they're gay. And so we're going to help them do that. And hopefully that will change the hearts and minds of their colleagues in whatever body they choose to run for. And it is happening across the country, and great things are happening when people get elected. There are, you know, you're in Florida, and we need the very first openly LGBT member of the Florida legislature. Certainly the biggest state out there that doesn't have an openly gay person in their legislature. So if anybody's thinking of running for the state legislature, let us know.
I should tell you that even though I live in Tallahassee, there are a couple of things in my history form that might not look too good. So I have to disqualify myself. Absolutely, we just don't want to go there. And you're right, the Florida so needs it. And you'd think of all places, Florida, we would already, you know, with the Fort Lauderdale area and Key West and Miami Beach and.
Yeah.
And even Tampa, the Tampa St. Pete area is growing. You know, North Florida is different, obviously. It's like an extension of South Georgia. But South Florida is, like, very progressive by comparison in many, many ways. You'd think we would have already done that. And I have met the people in the
Falls of Florida. We have our fingers crossed for 2008. And the other thing I would urge people to do is when you do have a candidate who has stepped up, our community has to get behind that person. It's important. And, you know, I even hear sometimes from within our community that people say, oh, I'm not going to support someone just because they're gay. And we don't ever ask people to do that. We want them to support people because they're the best candidate. And we hope that our vetting process gives people really great candidates, not just gay candidates.
Wonderful. One other quick question, and that's about your technical person. I've noticed your website is excellent, and in fact, we're going to be having Jeremy Davis on, I think, Thursday evening from the Blairco Project, because their website is excellent. I've noticed you have the
nice
banner on your email. You apparently have some good tech people. Are they on staff?
Well, the people who develop the website are not. They're vendors for us. They're based here in D.C., and they're gay-owned, as a matter of fact. Just fantastic people to work with. But I am blessed with some staff in our communications department who are ridiculously talented, and I could not do what I do without them, and they deserve most of the credit, usually.
Well, kudos to them. And the very last thing, I've asked you so many questions from so many different directions. I just wanted to open it up and let you say whatever you wanted to say. Surely I haven't hit all of the points that you might have wanted to bring up this evening.
Well, I just want to say that 2008 is going to be an incredibly exciting year for us. We're going to certainly break the century mark, a number of candidates that we endorse. There'll probably be at least one, if not more, congressional candidates, which, as you know, we used to have three to four congressional openly gay people in Congress, and we're down to two now with me and Barney, and Barney's going to retire sometime in the future. So I don't want to get down to one. We'll need more people in the House or the Senate. But there will be other races that are exciting. We'll have a race in Oregon where the Secretary of State is certainly the leading candidate now, Kate Brown. She's openly bisexual, and she'll be running for statewide seat. Jim Roth in Oklahoma. John Arrowwood is running for the Court of Appeals in North Carolina, which is another statewide election. So there will be great opportunities for people to get involved. And we just ask people to stay tuned and help us out when you can.
Well, wonderful, and thank you for everything you do. I should point out, too, that I monitor the chat room during the shows, and you've been very well received. In fact, people are asking you to come back, not only to recommend a candidate here, if you like. Of course, I'll be pursuing them anyway, but for you to come back, maybe even after the conference, we'd love to hear about that. Certainly, you can pick up the phone and give a call to the toll-free line. I'll put you on the air anytime. You don't have to wait for a formal invitation.
Thank you, Peter. I really appreciate it. This is a great resource, and I'm glad that I was able to be on tonight.
And I'm glad I found you guys. God bless you, sir. I hope you feel better soon.
Thank you. This is about a week long. I've had this cold now, so I'm not sure it's going away before the conference.
Well, you probably don't want me to do the mother routine, but are you gargling with salt water, drinking orange juice, pineapple juice?
That's exactly
I could do the mother thing. I could do the mother thing. Just trust me on that. So it's been wonderful. Thank you so much, Dennis.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you for being on the show. Yes, sir. Good evening to you. What a wonderful guest. I enjoyed talking to him, and I enjoyed talking to Howard Bayless. In fact, I have enjoyed talking to every single one of the folks that we have had from the Victory Fund. Each and every one, their vetting process must be pretty good, because they really know how to handle themselves on an interview, and they're personable, and what fun. What fun that was. So, let's see, checking clocks and all that sort of thing, and I'm finding that as we come up on the break. You're listening to Strictly Confidential, toll-free, 877, the number 4, head-on. I'm your host, Peter Godbull, streaming exclusively on the Head On Radio Network.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at headonradionetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
Headonradionetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at headonradionetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
It wasn't exactly planes, trains, and automobiles on Head On with Bob Kincaid.
This is what the Bush Administration Justice Department didn't want you to see back in 2001. They took out and they huffed the marker a little bit, and then they went, oh, God. cool. And they wiped out the name where it says the plane was chartered either by the Saudi Arabian royalty family or Osama bin Laden. Somebody's got to call up and say, good afternoon. Thank you for calling Ryan International Flights. How may I help you?
Hello. This is Osama bin Laden, and I would like to rent a Boeing 727. Do you have one handy?
Oh, just a moment. Let me check. It's a Mr. bin Laden wants to know if we got a 727. Do we, Harry, do we have a 727?
Yeah, we got a 727 just sitting there on the lot. Going cheap.
There's nothing here. Nothing to look at. Keep moving. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. The, you know, the 6'7" Arab with the portable dialysis machine and the white robes.
Somebody's trying to make me stay. You know I've got to be moving on.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Weeknight, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, only on the Head On Radio Network.
What does Alison Krauss remember about music class when she was a kid?
My fondest memory of music class is kind of a, just an overall memory, not a specific instance, because music was something completely different than any other class in school. It was, I remember it as all being fun, and the reward wasn't, you know, a great test score, and it wasn't a higher grade. It was getting to be a part of an ensemble and singing something at the end where everybody knew their part. It was all fun and games to me, and you made friends. You know, I found that you made friends that lasted really long time, at least the ones that, for me, that have lasted the longest are ones that I met in school chorus or in music classes, and not who I sat next to in math.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, Gibson Guitar, Baldwin Piano, and this station. Music, part of a sound education.
Die for. You know, I live for my guests. I just love them. You know, my life really, you know, I can talk about me and Doggy, and I can talk about going to the post office, and, you know, I just don't have a, you know, that, well, I realize that I have the fabulous reputation to live up to, but actually my life isn't all that interesting. So I really love to have the guests. It's great. It means a lot to me, so, and I hope it does to you guys, too. And speaking of guests, we do have a caller. We have Jim on the line. Jim, welcome to Strictly Confidential.
Hey, Peter, how you doing?
I'm doing good, buddy. How about it?
Reasonably well. You know, I find some of your badinage and repartee about your going and coming is very interesting.
It's
a the show, which I think is very good.
Thank you.
I just wanted to make one statement very, very concisely, and that is in honor of Veterans Day. And
yeah.
Celebrated yesterday. And in saying so, I would like to, I guess, honor all people, regardless of their race, color, sexual orientation, background, who have served this country with, a great amount of devotion. And these are people for whom uncommon valor was indeed a common virtue. I mean, these people who put their lives at risk and many of them gave the last full measure of devotion. And I think we need to honor them tonight.
I agree. And I'm going to be contacting our friend Denny Meyer for later this week. Denny goes into hibernation after the Veterans Parade in New York. He does so much he's exhausted. So I was going to postpone a Veterans guest for a few days till he recovers. But you know, it is so important. so many people, and they've given more than we will ever know. And you know, not just the lost legs and the lost limbs, but emotional damage that is difficult, if not impossible, to ever recover from. And then we often kick them to the curb, at least today.
For many of these people, even though they come back, there is no such thing as an emotional prosthesis. And many of them suffer.
Good point.
Very, very,
very good.
Very, very, very greatly. And you know, they're afraid to, in many cases, to come out and say exactly how they feel or what they've been through. When they go to a doctor, the doctor tells them just to get over it and go on with your life. And yet that son of a bitch has never had a shell fired at him and you know, in danger. And that still goes on today.
It really does.
Without people, we could not have our country. We could not live. We could not, you know, self-actualize in any way or talk about the issues that we're talking about tonight. And this is an ecumenical appeal to all people of all races, all orientations, all colors, everything.
Well, that's well said, Jim. And this sentiment I completely agree with, and I believe all of the hosts would agree with, and it's well said, and the timing is perfect. It is the day where we think it's just potato salad and fried chicken, at least in this neck of the woods, but really there's much more to it.
Well, you know, I don't know if you've ever been to Arlington National Cemetery, but when you walk through there and you look at those fields of stone, those gardens of stone, I think the movie saw it one time. I mean, each of these people had dreams, hopes, aspirations, and a hope to come back to a brighter and better world. And a lot of them did not. And the world which a lot of them came back was neither brighter nor better. And that's what I hope we can do for all people.
I agree,
regardless of what you are, where you are, or whatever.
I agree, Jim. And I just hope that as we get more female politicians and GLBT politicians, I mean, the men have all had a chance. I mean, the straight heterosexual white men have had their chance. I think we really need, where it's going to take women and gay guys and lesbians to fix this mess. I realize that's a little flippant, but you know.
In addition to them, it's going to take the other component too. Attitudes can change. People can realize that they were wrong, and they can understand and realize that, you know, we all have to work together. That's the main thing.
Well said, Jim. Well said.
And
I wanted to tell you.
Yes.
No, well, I did want to tell you something. I have been watching a movie series. I think you'll find a hoot. It's called The House of Elliot, if you've heard of it. It is like a multi-CD or DVD about a fashion house in London. It's fabulous. You've seen it?
Oh, years ago. Absolutely.
I love it. I'm in the process of watching it. So you know, it's like five or six DVDs long with multiple episodes, and I've just been watching that one show now for 2 weeks, you know, when I have a chance. Oh, I just thought I'd tell you.
I'll tell you something else you might find interesting, Peter, is the life of Coco Chanel.
Oh, I bet I would.
I mean, here was a dirt-poor French girl who came up from nothing, absolutely nothing. I mean, I think her parents had to give her up to a convent. And she came to Paris, and by virtue of her own thrift and industry, was able to create an entire fashion world, which is still copied today. I mean, you know, there is nothing more elegant than a Chanel suit. And here was
yes, this is true.
Who had no education, no background, just poor dirt poor, who dressed Jackie Kennedy.
I'll definitely check that one out, Jim. And thank you for letting me know. I had no idea there was a DVD.
And this is in honor of Josephine Baker, the black girl from St. Louis, who came to Paris because he didn't get a scene gig in this country. But yet during the war, she was a member of the underground, fought the Nazis, and she died in poverty, and she was actually given respite from that poverty by, of all people, Princess Grace of Monaco.
She was amazingly talented. Some of the video and songs I've heard by her, she deserved her success. She deserved it. She absolutely deserved it. Fabulous.
And was was a member of the Legion of Honor and the Croix de Guerre, and was given a state funeral in 1975. A truly remarkable black lady.
I am going to definitely check out the Coco Chanel. And Jim, thank you for calling. You're always welcome.
Thank you, sir. Good night.
Yes, sir. Hang in there. Good night. And that was our caller, Jim, from a secret undisclosed location somewhere on the east coast of Florida. I have a song I've been meaning to play for you guys. In fact, I've got a bunch of music. No way to fit it all in tonight. No way. But I have one that I definitely want to run for you. In fact, our friend Glenn Rivera has recently done a video to this track, which is fabulous. It's on YouTube. He's using the movie War of the Roses, and if you've seen it, you know how horrifying that is. He's using the movie War on the Roses. He's remixed the movie to match this soundtrack. It's fabulous. It's Love on the Rocks. It's the Llama Extended Remix, Love on the Rocks. Great fun with that song. Actually, our friend Glenn Rivera used that particular remix to using clips from the movie War of the Roses, and it's on YouTube. You could probably locate it by running a search on YouTube for Love is on the Rocks, Glenn Rivera. That ought to pull it up. It's a hoot. If you remember that movie, that War of the Roses, that was all outright war. Do you remember she drove over his cars in the front of the house with the big four-wheel drive with the giant wheels, you know, the wheels that lifted it up, you know, 6-8 feet off the road, and they ended up trying to kill each other on the chandelier. She locked him in the steam room located in their home and locked the door, and he would just about die. Now that was a divorce. That was a DIVORCE becomes final today. They just don't make them like that anymore. You know, I mentioned to our guest who was on just earlier about the Mormons changing a shift in the church teaching, and we were talking about the people that they helped to get elected over in Utah. The story I was referring to, I hadn't told you about it, but it involves a gay Mormon. He tried to ignore his sexuality and actually married a woman, and last year he was excommunicated from the Church of Latter-day Saints because he told officials that he was attracted to men, even though he was faithful to his wife and wanted to stay married. They excommunicated him. And he was shocked to find out that 6 months later, they reversed the excommunication and said, okay, you can come back. And they issued a pamphlet called, and you're going to love the piety of this, God loveth his children. That takes a lot of balls to, excuse me, that takes a lot of nerve to use King James English in a freaking 21st century pamphlet. Anyway, the pamphlet says that same-sex attractions themselves are not sinful, although the activity is. So since he But, you know, by now he's no longer married to his wife, and he's no longer a member of the church. He pretty much kicked it to the curb. He was saying it was like don't ask, don't tell. You see, the thing is, for Mormons, homosexuality is just unimaginable. The core of the Mormon theology is the family unit, and, you know, the family is forever. You know, you need to get married, and then your family advances to different levels in heaven, and, you know, marriage is sealed in the temple, and the families ascend to their highest levels in heaven, and single Mormons can actually meet their mate in the hereafter and proceed to the higher. It's sort of like Amway. You know, you advance to level one, level two, level three. Want to tell you that there are a couple of tracks I didn't get to this evening that were sent to me by the fabulous, world's most fabulous straight guy, Billy Shears, which we will get to another evening. One is absolutely fabulous Eagles track. And the other, I think he's in cahoots with Kadon. I haven't quite figured it out, but there's some little note here in a cryptic email regarding Kate and Billy Shears. God knows what they're up to. But it's also a fabulous song. We'll get to those on another evening here on Strictly Confidential. Also want to mention that on the weekends we now have Rick Goodner. I have not heard his show yet. Bob and I were working on building the Mega Monster Beast, the computer with purple memory and a heat sink that looks like the Eiffel Tower and a big black sexy power supply and Western Digital Raptor boot drive. And honey, that thing takes names and kicks butt. We have invented Hal. Hal is now at the studio. Hal is being programmed. His memories are being added day by day. But Hal is it does exist, and Hal speaketh. In any case, Rick Goodner has a show on the weekend called Rick Place. He's the horn psychologist. God knows we need one. Remind you also of Billy Shear's Night Sounds, which appears at 9 p.m. on Saturday evenings. And Matt Swords, I believe I'm pronouncing it correctly. I'm looking forward to hearing his show. Apparently he's doing a great job. I want to remind you that coming up next is the world's most fabulous guy from Chicago, and he is doing the Nighttime Cup of Joe. He will be appearing in just a few minutes at 11. And following that, at 12, we have the one and only John Fox and his program, Foxed Up. And we're looking forward to hearing from John tonight. Bob indicated earlier that John has a special message or special topic this evening, and we're looking forward to hearing that. And, God, I just said a whole bunch in a short period of time, but it's getting close to that time. And, you know, Cynthia Manley has been in the green room. She has been practicing. I've been hearing her practice. She's got her boa on. She's standing in front of the floor mic, and she is ready to remind you to...
This is the Quality News Network. Pakistan being given 10 days to lift current martial law or face suspension from a 53-nation bloc. Foreign ministers put out the warning in light of continuing emergency rule in Pakistan. Former Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto placed again under house arrest for the second time in 4 days. She's being kept from leading tomorrow's 185-mile procession in protest of current martial law. President Musharraf promises that general elections will be held by January 9th, but that the state of emergency imposed 1 week ago will stay in place till then. Hamas police killing 7 people in Gaza City during a huge political rally to commemorate the death of Yasser Arafat. Another 130 people were wounded. There's a growing humanitarian crisis in Somalia. Over the last 24 hours, residents fled the capital city of Mogadishu as government forces increased efforts to crush Islamist-led insurgents. Aid workers say at least 70 people have been killed during more than 1 week of intense fighting, bringing the total number of displaced Somalians to 850,000. The U.S. military is reversing the troop surge in Iraq. Commanders are waiting to see if the recent drop in violence will hold. 20 combat brigades have shrunk to 19 in the volatile Diyala province. The White House is under federal court order to preserve copies of its email messages in response to a pair of lawsuits brought by two private citizens groups. The U.S. Justice Department asked that the courts accept a White House promise to save all future backup tapes, but U.S. District Judge Henry Kennedy decided that was not enough. As the Roman Catholic Church in the U.S. attempts to overcome a damaging scandal involving pedophile priests, Pope Benedict XVI makes a visit to America next April. He'll visit Washington, D.C. and New York City.